Hi, I'm Jenny Castro, and this is Holding It Together, a joint production of Mennonite Church USA's Office of Women in Leadership and the Mennonite Inc. This summer, we're breaking silences. We're talking about subjects we've typically avoided. We're choosing to release shame, discomfort, and fear as we courageously face conversations we've been putting off for too long. I hope you'll join us.
I grew up thinking that the only way to overcome that shame of being a woman was to somehow be perfect.
As a Latina woman that has taken different roles of leadership, I have internalized this aspect that I have to have my act together and do it right for women and for women of color.
Letting myself be seen and the hurt and the wounds and the shame, that was probably the most transformational experience of my life.
We hold within us the capacity to love and give generously and live brave lives, and the capacity to really screw up.
Today we're talking about failure with three very strong and very wise women. Marithana Prothrow is Assistant Professor of Communication at Bluffton University in Ohio. Linda Gaiman Peachy is a freelance writer who just completed a Doctor of Ministry degree from Lancaster Theological Seminary in Pennsylvania. Elizabeth Soto Albrecht is Professor of Practice, the Coordinator of Field Education, and Advisor for Global Theological Education at Lancaster Theological Seminary. You can read full bios for each of our guests at the Holding It Together website on Fireside.
Marithana, Elizabeth, and Linda, welcome to Holding It Together.
Thank you so much, Jenny. I'm excited to have this conversation.
Yes, thank you for opening up these topics that are hard to talk about.
Un placer estar con ustedes.
So I don't know how much or how well we know each other, how much time we've spent in the same room together. Perhaps we can break the ice a bit by going around and just sharing what drew you to this conversation. Why did you accept this invitation? And what about this conversation makes you nervous?
Well, I'm a podcast nerd. And so like the ability to kind of get to participate in one is really exciting. But also when I think about the topic of failure in particular, one of the big pieces of my journey lately has been working through and with the Enneagram. And I am a 3 on the Enneagram. And so failure is a particularly frightening piece and experience for me, but it's also something that I am learning to embrace as necessary for my own growth. And that is in particular, I think, what drew me to this conversation.
I have not actually been looking forward to this conversation, and yet I feel like it is an important one. And so I look forward to what we learn from each other in tackling this. I also know, in particularly hearing from people working on anti-racism, that we need to be much more open to the possibility that we'll mess up. I guess I feel like maybe that is something that we in the church need to be more open to exploring, the willingness to make mistakes and not present ourselves as having it all together.
Yes, I join Linda. I originally said, oh, no, I don't want to talk about this. But more and more, I thought about the questions. It was a time for me to do self-reflection. How is it in my leadership that I embrace my own failures, learn from them, and move forward? It's very painful. And I say, well, maybe this is a good time to be vulnerable and share and listen and learn as well.
What makes failure so hard to discuss, so hard to face?
Well, I think for me, and maybe more generally for women, failure is often tied to shame, and that it's pretty easy to go from, if I make a mistake, then there's something wrong with me. I think especially because in Christian theology, women have been tied, we're tied to Eve, and the entry of sin into the world. And so therefore, somehow, I think I grew up thinking that the only way to overcome that shame of being a woman was to somehow be perfect. And maybe it's not just being a woman. I remember as a child, and I don't know if other people experienced this, but I felt like I couldn't become a Christian until I could be perfect for at least a day. And so I remember trying, you know, probably I was, I don't know, 8 or 9 years old, and trying desperately to have at least one perfect day. And I don't remember what I did that was wrong, but it felt like I never managed that. So I think there's a lot of shame and a sense that somehow I'm not worthy just because of who I am. I'm not just worthy in and of myself, but somehow I have to prove myself. And so failure casts a lot of doubt on whether I am actually really worthy to be part of the church, worthy to be who I am. So that, for me, I think makes it really difficult to acknowledge failure, to acknowledge mistakes.
As a Latina woman that has taken different roles of leadership, I have internalized this aspect that I have to have my act together and do it right for women and for women of color. And particularly when I am the first of this or that, it produces a sense of overwhelming, the sense of, oh my God, if I do something wrong, it's not Elizabeth Soto, this goes down. But all my Latinas, they said, well, that's why we don't want them in leadership, because they're too emotional. They raise their voice and they do these things with their hands, whatever stereotypes that we may have as women. And then as Latina women, Linda, you talked about shame. I would talk about self-forgiveness to say, you know what? I am going to miss the point. I am not going to get it right. I am not going to represent all the Latinos and Latinas. I am me with all my failures and all my gifts. I'm getting ready right now to lead students to Chiapas, Mexico, a seminary course that I've been teaching on cross-cultural and awareness as global theologians. And I'm going to start the course right in the airport in Mexico City, say, you know what? I am going to be frustrated with you. I am going to occasionally lose it. I'm going to be very fatigued, because I have all of your lives I'm responding to. So right now, I'm going to be forgiving myself and picking up and moving forward, something that I've learned to do for my own. But there's still that sense that as a leader, I have to have my act together. And there's that double necessity to have it.
When I think about what makes failure so hard, like, it's helpful to me when I think about kind of the cultural landscape that we're functioning in, right? Failure is scary when we perceive everything as a zero-sum game. Everything is set up with winners and losers. And for lack of better language right now, this is evidence of capitalism and patriarchy. Like, there are all of these powers and principalities that are there that focus on hierarchy. And it's so hard to disentangle kind of sense of self-worth and identity from this constant challenge to not want to be on the bottom of the pile. And I think part of what makes it so hard is it's really hard to imagine the world in a place where we're not stacked on top of each other, but maybe one where some different image of how we interact as people and as a community. Because I think that failure piece of not being on top means that someone else is winning. And that is where my mind naturally goes, but it's really hard to move away from that idea of a dualistic zero-sum game, which I think is a myth. That's not really how we work, or how God works especially.
Your comment makes me think something that I've said occasionally in public and very privately. When I failed the expectation of a committee, a board, myself, and we take it very personal. And one thing that I've learned, I see systems that expose us to failure to say, that's where I got you. So it makes me think not only, yes, I could have done better here, but that was really a setup. And I walked right in it. And there's that duality as well. And that type of currency and power that other systems have upon us expose us to failure. And as a little girl that studied in Chicago, my education was stolen from me. And I was always ashamed that I did not know how to read and write. I was ashamed of there. I was a failure, academic failure, but it was the system that exposed all the Puerto Rican little boys and girls in 1960 in Cooks County, Chicago, early arrival Puerto Ricans. It's a system. So thank you for that comment. To take it personal, yeah, but take it institutional.
I think that's such a profound insight to say how our personal failure, and we tend to think of it as our own, right? Our mistakes, our failures are our private, intimate things that we're very careful with who knows about them, but how they expose systems that are rooted in patriarchy, are rooted in winners and losers, duality, like there are only good people and bad people. And the reality is we hold all of that. We hold within us the capacity to love and give generously and live brave lives and the capacity to really screw up.
Well, I'm thinking about, what do we think about Jesus, this perfect Palestinian Jewish man? He screwed up a few times. He didn't have it right in a few times. And many of us have preached this painful encounter with this Gentile woman in which Jesus compares her with dogs. However exegesis and hermeneutics you want to do with that, that's an insult, my people. When I take that and use that in Spanish and English, it says, Jesus, you know, that's why I love you, because you don't have it right all the time. You're not perfect in that time. So as leaders, we're not going to have it right all the time. I see my type of leadership is the best in teamwork, where I've worked with projects with Linda Peachy. And I do better when I work with her strength and I say, well, here, I don't know. Or we have presentations together because I don't know it all. And I do better in teamwork. And that type of model of working is very woman-oriented. And there's studies about this. But it's a framework in which when the solo leader comes to play, you are there alone.
Yeah, one thing that I thought of is that expectations about leaders are sort of built into the patriarchal capitalist model as well. And Elizabeth talked about that. I find also that I feel much more comfortable and I feel like I can be a leader in the context of a team or of people working together. And that's been something I really struggled with earlier on in my life, sort of this sense that I was failing because I wasn't like the male leaders around me who operated in a different kind of way. And it's taken me a long time to learn that I can succeed as a leader when I accept ways of leading that feel much more comfortable to me and don't force myself into fitting into a mold that is not authentic. And I think there's a lot about those other models that are not healthy either. I think these systems set up certain models that are not healthy for any of us.
When you were talking, Linda, you said, I'm a leader, that language. It made me think, I have a 6-year-old son. He'll be 7 this summer, and his best friend is his same age. They're both children of communication professors, so they love to debate. And a frequent argument between them is who is going to be the leader. And so I find myself frequently trying to convince these 2 6-year-olds that anyone can be a leader. And what you're talking about is being the boss. And I think that's a really simple distinction, but sometimes we feel like leadership looks like being the boss instead of, you know, helping people, listening, doing what's right, even when it's hard or no one's looking. And it's just so funny to me how much our language sometimes hinders us or limits our imagination for what we think could be possible.
I'm thinking about being genuine. It usually takes a self-development and a time in our lives in which we find our voices, both written in presencia and having the courage to say, this is what I am. I am not this and I'm not that. And whoever is going to hire me, whoever is going to invite me, needs to know that this is what they're taking and be proud of that. And usually chronologically, as women, there's little moments in our lives. I'm 59, soon to enter the wonderful 60s. And one thing that I find myself doing when I'm doing yoga in my mat is saying, my intention is to be me, genuinely me. So there's that self-love, that self-care, that self to say, I am good enough. I don't have to be meeting other people's expectations. It's so tiresome. I am tired. I am tired of wanting to be this Latina leader that other people want me to be. And I just need to be myself. And I feel that the calling of Cristo Sofia is to be myself, to be our genuinely self and bring that to the mat, bring that to the table. And that is plenty, not only enough, but plenty, suficiente.
To believe that who I am is enough. That gives you grace to fail and confidence to take chances, right? I think it's one thing to believe that and to feel that as a person, but we live in a society where there's a reluctance to openly discuss failure. We talked about this, and you alluded to it earlier, about expectations of our leaders and what leaders and authorities should be and what they shouldn't be. A tendency to expect perfection in leadership, folks we look up to expect leaders to be infallible. It creates a culture where leadership or authority, whatever that may be. I mean, I've heard parents say, oh, I can't apologize to my children because they might believe that I don't have it together. So any kind of leadership, parents, teachers, community, church leadership, we're afraid to admit our fallibility because we're afraid of appearing somehow less of a leader. And culturally, I've seen, and if I'm really honest, I've experienced just real castigation, no mercy when you are in a leadership position and fail. It's one thing to believe it for ourselves. How can we begin to create communities where it's different?
I want to start with the concept of grace. And I want to be contextual with the Mennonite Church. And as someone that have embraced my Catholic background, a person working in a very ecumenical setting, Lancaster Theological Seminary, which I love. But I have arrived to a place, and I can say this being 40 years in the Mennonite Church, I don't think we have a good concept of what grace means. Or maybe we have it in biblical confessions, but we don't know how to live up to the grace of God. I find it with other Christian traditions a little better. Catholics, we start Mass saying, I have failed, and there's a confession. Now, in a little bit of liturgical orders that we do in some of the churches, there's a confessional and so forth. The assurance of forgiveness that follows that spiritual exercise as a community. That lack of living grace that we internalize, that when I mess up, I know I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it from the institution. I'm going to get it from the church. I'm going to get it from my husband. I'm going to get it from myself. And where is the concept of grace? And I once preached about this, in which my metaphor of grace was my aunt. When I messed up and I went to her crying, she would just fix me up. So, okay, Ellie, be nice. Okay, it happened. But she perked me up. She's dead now, Celia Soto. But she was my sense of grace of God, in which perfection was not the goal. And with ongoing expression of true forgiveness and even laughing about our own mistakes, wasn't that funny? And then let's move on. And I learned that in my culture from a woman that died of cancer 29 years ago. And I miss grace places. And I find her occasionally sitting in our pews saying, that's okay, Elizabeth. We still love you. And laughing together. So the concept of grace in our Mennonite culture and ethos, we don't have it. I say it as one interpreter. I may be totally wrong.
I would agree. I think that as a whole, you know, I'm not a cradle Mennonite, but this idea of grace, I think it's so hard for us to have grace for ourselves. I'll speak from experience. It's easier for me to have grace for one of my students who maybe misspeaks or gets something wrong than it is for me to have grace with myself when I make a parenting error or I mess up, right? I attend Grace Mennonite Church in Pandora, Ohio, and a group of women and I there, we've been reading some Brené Brown together. And I feel like a huge piece of work that deals with failure is accepting that we're lovable as we are. The security of just being like, as I am, warts, mistakes, errors, successes, no matter what, I'm lovable. And that is how God sees me. And that is, I think, how God wants us to see ourselves, that we are lovable. It's only been in recent years that I have heard people preach about love your neighbor as yourself means that there is work to love yourself. I think that is so hard. The idea as you are, I try to repeat that so frequently and I know it, but I am not quite yet sure that I believe it. And I see myself in these places where I start to perform or I start to read the room or those fronts that I feel like we start to put up with people to be what we think they expect us to be. I'm learning to see those moments as places where, wait, Marithana, as you are, you deserve love and grace. You don't need to perform to be lovable. And that is so difficult. And that is so antithetical to so much of what we are taught. So much of our culture is built around an assumption of deficiency. We assume that we are deficient in some way rather than, I got amazing things to bring to the table. Yeah, I'm going to mess up, but that doesn't make me deficient. That is empowering and it's incredibly frightening for me also, because I think with it also comes a challenge to do something. What that is, I don't know. I'm still figuring that out.
I think the other thing in terms of leadership that I struggle with, maybe in terms of how I think about other leaders, is that maybe we have such high expectations because of the power that goes with certain positions. And to recognize that, I know when I've been in a leadership role, it's really important to be aware of the power that comes with that position, even if I don't feel powerful. There's a lot of weight that people give when you're in that role. People give a lot of weight to what you say or don't say, what you do or don't say. And so I think, in especially as I work with other leaders or encounter other leaders, that issue of power, it's not just theoretical power, but it has effects on people's lives. That's a piece that, again, I think maybe in our churches we haven't known quite what to do with. I especially find myself struggling, I think, when there are people in those leadership positions who don't acknowledge the power that they have and don't act in ways that listen well to the people who are affected by those decisions.
Wow. You've opened a new direction this conversation, Linda, when we talk about power. The image that comes to mind right away is, remember when we used to play La Papa Caliente, the hot potato, and you're throwing it to each other. And its power is like this ball, the authority given it to us. And then what do I do with this? No, I don't want it. It's hot. So here, you take it. And sometimes different committees and in different contexts, I've seen we hold this hot potato called power. And sometimes as a leader, it falls in our hands. And sometimes it's terrifying. I don't know what to do with this. Because when it comes to me, it's because other people want me to do this and that. It's prescribed. But what when I don't want to do this and that? I want to do this other with that power. And that's when we come into the struggle of power. And then there's the aspect of our style of exercising power as well. And so there's a whole gamut of culture, of context, and in our gender, into how we articulate that power given to us by God, power given to us by a community that calls us to work, serve, teach, and how do we prefer to exercise that. What is really surprising is that there are some people that absolutely love the hot potato. And I think I'm more scared of those people that hold on them too long, too much, And then I start beginning to question, hey, share that power. So it's that currency that is given to us by society or not given to us by society, given to us by church member or not given to us.
Using the language of currency, I'm going to quote Amy Poehler from her book, Yes, Please, which I don't recommend for all audiences by any means, but it's full of wisdom. And one of the things that she talks about is owning our currency, that we each have a particular kind of currency. And that when you own it, that's how you can have wisdom about how you spend it and how you use it in our relationships and with people. And, you know, this metaphor of the hot potato and the person who holds on to it for too long, the potato's hot and it's going to burn you. And there is a lack of wisdom in those moments too, I think, that scares me to think about a lack of self-awareness and, okay, I'm going to get burnt here and I don't have the right currency to spend in this moment. It's really terrifying to me when I see leaders who are asking for power or taking it and they do not have wisdom, and it's clear that they are not self-aware in their lack of a particular kind of currency. So maybe they don't know how to listen, or maybe they don't know how to be vulnerable. And having the courage in those spaces to step up and say, I don't know if you have the right currency right now. That's really taboo and it's hard. There's something about wisdom in those moments and the ability to take the right risks at the right times.
This is an important dynamic that you brought up, Linda, this idea of power. What I hear from y'all is that, yeah, an awareness of power is vital in positions of leadership. I think folks who want to hold on to the potato, who want to keep power, are often kind of rooted in the system where perfection is expected, where a hierarchy, top-down, winner-loser, is the system they operate under. Because power is the goal, right? Being on top, being in charge, being the boss is the goal, as opposed to what is the alternative? What is it that we hope for?
I'm a consultant for this year, 2018, with MDS. And it's a very, everybody knows it. It's a white male culture, and they are aware of that. And here they have asked an administrator to go to Puerto Rico and respond to the disaster there, because I know the culture, I know my people, I know the churches there and the leadership. When I arrived, I know there was three coordinators, Puerto Rican, and I said, you know what, I'm an outsider. You know me coming in and out, but I'm really an outsider. I see my role is empowering yours. So immediately, this is the image I gave them. I'm not on top. I am behind all three of you to empower you, to push you forward, to work together, and to keep the vision of responding to a disaster, and ultimately to do things correctly, because there are higher powers, North Americans, saying Puerto Rican have to have act together and respond to this right. So the stake is high, in particular the people in need is real. In feminist studies, I've embraced the aspect of I do best when I empower others, when I empower my students, when I empower my girls, when I learn how to ask the question. There are situations that I am asked to lead from the front, but I do much better when I lead from the back. And in a hierarchical pyramid way, it's unseen. You're either the jefe or you're not. And I think as a leader that influence, I do better empowering others and not necessarily need to be visible.
Thanks, Elizabeth. That is an alternative. We need to continue to imagine what are the possibilities and continue to ask those questions, because there are so many alternatives. So I want to bring it to a question that's perhaps more personal. Your life and experience personally, out in the world, professionally. Can you talk about failure and a lesson that you've learned through it?
For me, sitting in the pit of a hole and looking around in complete darkness, what felt like isolation and darkness and a space where I had no other choice but, quite frankly, self-reliance and vulnerability. like the only way I was going to get out of that hole was letting other people see my stuff. And letting myself be seen and the hurt and the wounds and the shame, that was probably the most transformational experience of my life. Having people really see me for the first time and recognizing that they still accepted me, I didn't know what grace and love and community really felt like until I failed and was like in crappy dark spot. Learning what that was like, and also for me learning just how much of a super bad I am. I had no idea, and I don't have another word for it, so I'm sorry, church people, but that is the truth. And it's something that I feel like I draw on now when I'm questioning whether it's worth another risk. I survived that one, and it's going to be okay. It might be hard, it might be lonely, but I am not alone. God is present with me through the people that surround me with love and grace, and I never understood that until I was in that dark hole of failure.
I think for me, I thought of one particular experience that I had where I made a huge mistake in how I was organizing a particular workshop, and it really blew up and was just a very, very negative experience. But I learned what not to do again. When you failed at something, you know, you really learn some profound lessons. And I also learned that one can pick up the pieces, that there is grace to move forward. And that, you know, when you are able to address relationships that were affected by that, that those relationships can continue, and that there is grace and we're stronger than we think. And relationships that we care about, we can address them and move forward with more honesty, maybe with more grace and honesty and authenticity, I guess. And part of being older, I think, is learning that we are able to go on.
When I finished as moderator of Mennonite Church USA, I felt a failure. I felt that I was the worst moderator that the church have ever had. I felt I accomplished totally nothing. There were fighting systems, fighting people. I finished wasted, totally wasted. And then I fell into the most awful depression I've ever felt in my life emotionally as I worked to rediscover myself. But there was a teachable moment there as well. The grace of God was sufficient to show me some of the victories and some of the fights that maybe, as a parent, I knew this. There's some things that is worth fighting with the kids and some wars just let it go. And I knew that. But I've never translated that skill to the church arena. And it opened my eyes, not romanticizing the people of God. But still, I came out of that loving the church more, believing on the call, and feeling so proud of myself that although many occasions I wanted to let go and disappear, but I had people that believed in the calling, people who believed in me, people who were praying for me. I felt held. So it was a teachable moment as I picked up my pieces. Who am I as a leader? What not to do, what not positions to get into, but at the same time to know what my strengths are and understand that I'm a fighter. I can't go away from that. And that's not welcome in Mennonite environments, but I am a warrior. I am a spiritual warrior. I am a fighter. And there's some wars that I will go in totally equipped and knowing that some will be lost and some will be gained for the kingdom. It's not easy, and whatever you do, you won't satisfy everyone. And that's something that I learned.
I think one of the things that I have learned through failure is the absolute importance of self-care, because when we are operating out of pain and out of being totally drained and not caring for ourselves, we just don't make good decisions. And so One particular failure that I experienced professionally was just a result of me being so depleted and so beat down and so miserable and depressed that I just was so unhealthy that I just didn't do well. I've learned from that experience, and I'm probably, people think I'm crazy, just over-vigilant, get up early in the morning, 4:30, go running, meditate, do yoga, like go to bed at 9 o'clock so that I can do it again, because it's like, no, I have to care for myself for all of this, like won't work.
We have learned the hard way that self-care is number one. It's a way of being graceful to ourselves and say, you know what? I can't anymore, you know, let all hell go loose. But, you know, right now, hago la retirada, I'm leaving. And that takes a lot of courage to say, you know, no puedo, because we don't have models of leaders like that. So Jennifer, when you model self-care, the generation that you represent, you're saying it is okay. It's okay to cry and be fed up and say, you know what, I need to practice this. Whatever you need, and each one of us need to be in tune of what our bodies are telling us, what our souls are telling us, and to not allow ourselves to go to that point, because we're not good for ourselves, for those who truly love us, and for the calling. So thank you for moderating that. And I honor those wonderful tears.
And I would keep building on that, that feelings are not failure. I think that is a great myth that especially women, and unfortunately men, fall victim to it as well, right? That seems like a moment where we lose control, but who says control is worth anything? Those feelings are real. And I'm a person who has really big feelings, and I still work very hard to not say, I'm sorry, I'm crying, it's sharing time at church. I just said, I have big feelings, people, get used to it. It's going to happen. And that is a sign of beauty and strength, I think.
I would also affirm that awareness of what we need. And I think that is part of the, maybe it goes back to expectations that we have of leaders, that somehow they should have it all together. And I think maybe our systems are set up to reward people who aren't aware of what they need. And they're not aware either of their power or of their weaknesses. And that's a very dangerous combination. So I think if we can model that kind of awareness, both of our power and of what we need to care for ourselves, and I think it also translates into being aware of what the people around us might need, what the community needs, and honoring and celebrating that capacity to be aware and to be sensitive and to be paying attention. I think those are all really necessary for the kind of leaders that I think God is calling us to be or to model.
We've come to the end of our conversation. Thank you all so, so much for sharing from your wisdom and experience. I treasure it. Thank you.
Thank you. I feel like I now have so much to go and reflect and journal on. I feel like it's also a gift. So thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer, for creating a safe place for us to meditate together as women in the journey. Muchas gracias. It fed my soul today.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to listen and learn from each one of you.
Brené Brown is a shame and vulnerability researcher from here in Texas. In her work, she talks about how so many of us avoid vulnerability at all costs. We cover up our weaknesses and failures. We deny them. We pretend they don't exist. But she says that in facing our failure, she uses the word rumbling. In rumbling with our failure, honestly, we're able to integrate our failure into our story. We're able to learn from it, and we're able to grow. I think that's some of the hard work we've done here in this conversation today, and we'll continue to do it. I'm so grateful to this brave group of women who so gracefully agreed to talk with us today. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Marathana. Thank you, Linda. What do you wish people talked more about? What conversations have you been yearning to have? Send me a voice memo at jennifer.c@mennoniteusa.org and tell me about your subject. Why is it so hard to talk about? Why do we need to be talking about it? Perhaps you'll be featured on our Breaking Silences Talkback episode. This episode was produced by me, Jenny Gostel, with editing help from Shay Langley. Our theme music was written and recorded by the very talented Addie Lichty. To find more music by Addie, look for Addie and the Subtracts on Facebook or Addie Lichty on YouTube. Holding It Together is a joint production of Mennonite Church USA's Office of Women in Leadership and the Mennonite Inc. Look for us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Fireside, or wherever you prefer. If you have a second, I'd invite you to rate and review us. And please tell your friends about us. I'm your host, Jenny Gostel. Thanks for listening, y'all. Talk soon. Small. It's what I do.